Happy call number six. We're just going to jump right in like we usually do and talk about our homework that came out of Dale Carnegie's 30 Principles. Now, if you didn't get, I have been collaborating with the Dale Carnegie people here in Jersey, and we do have some contacts, connections. If you would like a little copy of Dale Carnegie's little golden book, you can go PDF or you can actually cut it out. It's kind of a fun little 10-pager you could probably use in the stores, and it summarizes, he calls it the little golden book. It summarizes those principles and explains them a little bit. But I have to say again, I'm just really amazed at what answers are coming out of your bodies and brains here. So just going to review a few of these highlights of the 30. It seemed quite a few were repetitive, so we seem to be attracted to certain similar concepts. Here's a few. Try to see things honestly from other people's points of view. I'd say that would be habit number 5 for all you Cubby fans out there. Having this perspective allows you to better understand someone, make their decision, and why it could differ from my own. This comes with maturity and confidence. It allows you to anticipate how someone will react and be better prepared. Like that one pretty well. We heard smile several times. And so couldn't, of course, again, list all these, but here's a smile. And it reminded me of the news I saw last night. I don't know if anybody caught it. It was national news at McDonald's. And a lady who was working there for 20 years had impressed one of the car dealers. And I don't know, he wasn't even a car dealer, just a normal customer that was there every day. And he just happened to have conversations with her. A car broke down, kept breaking down. So he bought her a car. But they actually caught that on the news. But he just said, you know what, you've been smiling at us for 20 years. And it was, you know, again, it's service. It wasn't the perfect pretty smile that you would think. It was just your common, unbelievable, compassionate act from somebody just smiling. And it was on. We caught that on the news. And my wife, we need more of these on the news. So here's principle number 9. Make the other person feel important. Do it sincerely. When someone genuinely makes us feel important, serotonin and dopamine are released. We bring happiness and feelings of pleasure. Yes, that is true. And you probably all know that one of our leading causes of sickness in our world is depression. And those are amazing, as we call them, SSRIs, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, medicine that we take. But sometimes when we wean off that medicine, that's where we get it from. We get it from exactly that, making people feel better. Use encouragement. We saw that one several times. I like this one. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Can you imagine? We could all live by that. And by never criticizing others, instead finding ways to help coach. This is a person that talked about the seagull management. You've probably heard of the seagull management. That's when people fly in the situation, poop on you, and leave. We use that one in business quite a bit, but that's not what we want, and definitely not what Peter wants. Principle number 2, if you are wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically. For many years, I believed that admitting I was wrong was a sign of weakness, but I learned that admitting my mistakes, you can develop trust, and I would agree with that huge leadership trait, especially in companies and military. And being able to say I'm sorry is another big one in that category. Admitting you're wrong, you remove the human ego. Yes, anybody who's married, anybody who's in a relationship, better figure that out. And even if you're not, you better figure it out, because it's gonna help. Another one for smile. They say it takes less muscles to smile than frown, but with society today, it seems like we still want to use those muscles. It only takes 17 more muscles. Small muscles that could change the world. They say a smile can confuse people. I think that was somebody that went to John Hughes' course. We should take more time to think about smiling. Here's one. My mom used to tell me, in order to have a friend, you have to be a friend. Habit 13, when we begin in a friendly way, we set the tone from camaraderie. Camaraderie is what makes my team accept constructive criticism without making them feel like I'm attacking them personally. And we learn as we mature also, especially in relationship with I messages are. And we teach these in our phase two leadership when we can. And the I messages are, we don't attack people by saying you. Oh, you did this, you did that. That really is attacking, and we feel we put the wall up. But when we say, I feel that this is what you're doing, I feel, when you start with the word I, the I message, things are a little bit more accepted. It takes a little while to work on that. Probably the one that had the most was be a good listener, encourage others to talk about themselves. And we've spent a lot of time on that concept. And it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, leaders who don't listen will eventually be surrounded by people who definitely won't. And here's another one, Dale Carnegie, Principle and the Four Walls. The one I like is number 29, use encouragement. The old teach, don't tell, coach, don't yell. Perfect way to keep people from wanting to learn. Praise the slightest improvement. Praise every improvement. Of course, there again, reinforce positive behavior. And then give honest, sincere appreciation. Remember, we talked about when we feel appreciated, it's the same spot in our brain that makes us feel like we're receiving cash. And so, you know, that's a good kind of metaphor there. And then one for the generally interested in other people. Principle number four. So, again, the homework, really enjoy and appreciate what you guys are putting into it. But we wanted to spend some time. We're down in the training center. We have all this data when people come through, and it's become a big part of what we do, talking about finances and how ill-prepared we are. So you might just ask yourself in the question, you know, where am I in that category? Where am I? Where's my team? By answering a question my old Uncle Ernie used to always ask, hey, kid, you making any money? And, you know, it was an old Jersey thing, but it's not really the question of making any money. He should have been saying, hey, kid, are you keeping any of your money? And so that's what we're seeing here, and we want to address it, and we have a couple of ideas for us today. And what we're seeing here is, you know, how much money you're making doesn't really matter. It's what's in the bank account. How are you managing your money? And so we call this a personal P&L. It's no different than the store. When we know we have our sales for the day in the store, and let's just say it's, you know, $10,000, it's not $10,000. It's, well, we have to take the taxes out. That little tax bug, you might just jot that down on your paper, and you know, we have to understand taxes a little bit better. I would say that probably nobody that I know of thoroughly understand taxes, including my certified public accountant, who I can tell you personally, I still don't know what I'm paying for taxes. So I've already paid a boatload, but until we do the taxes, we won't know what deductions were appropriate. We don't know exactly what tax bracket was. We don't know the changes. And so really what we have to do is we have to budget, and that number of $10,000 in sales is not $10,000. It's probably $9,000 once you start removing taxes. Same thing with a kid's paycheck. When we try to teach them, look, you're getting $10, you're putting $8.50 in the bank. You're not putting $10 in the bank. So that's one of the things we don't really talk much about. But I just love, and I think most everybody on this call has probably been through phase two leadership with John Hughes, Ripping Up the Dollar. And if you haven't been, you can find that now on the LMS. We've honored John with actually duplicating that on the electric highway there, and so you can see it. But, you know, we have those fixed costs, and in our life you have fixed costs, and we'll review a couple of those in a minute. But even in the store, we know food and we know labor. It's going to be about 50%. So I love it when he starts off and he just rips that dollar right down the middle, and people are like, what the? You know, you can't do that. You can't rip up a dollar, and legally, actually, you can. But it's amazing when the people are focus when we start ripping off little pieces and we get them involved. Well, what about your, what else is, you know, what about the garbage? What about the electricity? What about the rent? What about the, you know, you all of a sudden you're ripping off little pieces and then there's nothing left. That's your profit. And so when we say in our lives, are we making any money? How are we getting profitable in our own personal lives? And even the last time I was there was a great gestalt because I was sitting next to one of the gals who said, you know, there's only a little piece of that dollar left. And she leaned over and she said, we're going to need another dollar. And it was kind of like, no, that's not how it is. We're done. That's called debt. And so that would be borrowing money. So really what we're trying to do is trying to give ourselves a little bit more time to study this concept, and maybe it might bring us to the end result of a little more peace in our lives. Not to bring up the monks again, but it is my trademark. You know, some of the happiest people I think on the planet are living in a monastery, which is not real world, it's not society. But these guys have taken a vow of poverty. They have nothing, and yet they still seem to be happy. Because they don't worry about it. We see the number one thing we worry about in our lives is money. And I even can recall, and I'll share a quick story about, you know, I was dating a girl at one point in time, and a beautiful lady, and just, you know, you just have to take time sometimes. And it wasn't long before we found out that, you know, she was bankrupt. And she had filed bankruptcy, but it wasn't even that. It was just like the cavalier attitude, like, no, everybody does it. Everybody does it. And it was like, wow. Oh, yes, I have friends that have done it twice. And it was that attitude of, you know, that's just trying to beat the system because you have no concept of what the money is in our lives. And, you know, maybe it wasn't her fault. Maybe, you know, maybe nobody ever taught it to her. We don't get it in high school, it seems like. But somewhere along the line, we've got to start teaching this because we're seeing 20, 25-year-olds coming through class that really need help and are really struggling. And so that's why I want to bring up another little guy's name, Dave Ramsey. Now, this isn't a plug for his Financial Peace University, but I actually went to that. He would travel the country back 20 years ago and went to one at a local church. It wasn't my church, but it was just an interesting time to learn more about money and finances. And essentially, what he was saying was that really to be happy, we have to be debt-free. And it seemed like an impossibility. And if anybody's seen this, you know that he has a plan for that. Even a house mortgage, even to pay your whole house off, which would be like, well, I don't see that as an advantage. I need that as a tax break. Well, he would say no. You need to be totally debt-free. But really what he was saying in this whole presentation was this. People don't have a saving problem. People have a spending problem. And so that's the living within the means that we're not teaching. And it's sometimes rough on the kids because, you know, all you have to do is turn the TV on. I have a 4-year-old that turns the TV on, and it's like she already wants to buy 6 things from one commercial. And this is our lives. This is the gal that went bankrupt. You know, it's just we get desensitized. You see what I'm saying. So if we kind of understand what that is, I want to look at a couple things for us. It seems what these kids are telling us is that they don't understand cash because they're using credit cards. And those that are getting credit cards don't understand the interest rates. So if I were to ask you right now, what's the interest rate on your credit card, couldn't you tell me that? And, you know, it could be 5%, could be 25%. I was just helping my middle daughter buy a car, and when I got to the bank to co-sign, it had changed. We knew she could afford a $200 payment, and it changed to $300. Well, they just tried to pull a fast one, and they changed the interest rate from 4%, the one I agreed to 13%. And that changed that payment $100 a month, almost exactly. So that was a no deal. Thank you. Sorry. I think you're acting in a unlawful way. And so, you know, I'm not going to report you, but thank you, and just kind of ripped that thing up and left. But you get the point where we have to teach these things because we're seeing these kids get in debt and in big trouble with the credit cards. And so the ones we want to look at, a couple of rules. We could spend a lot of time here, but I was talking to one of my guys recently, 30 years old. He's getting a mortgage, and he was unaware of the 25% rule. And if you have been around anybody that is a budget-conscious teacher, you're going to know that if you're renting or if you're getting a house, you really can't allocate more than 25% of your take-home pay and expect to be successful. because that fixed cost is the number one cost next to your car. And we do know that, and I'm no expert, but I do know that that's the formula and it does work. So our average kid we're seeing, if they're making $4,000 a month, how much can they afford to pay in rent? Well, that'd be $1,000. And we're seeing numbers all over the board now. In this past few years, we've been looking at this. So, you know, that's one of those things. Take a look at what that means for you guys at 25%. Sometimes you can get to 30% depending on what section of the country you live in, but that's just a pretty darn good rule. And the next one is the cars we talk about now in our personal P&L. Everybody needs a car. Everybody probably has a car on this call. Most likely you have a car payment. I do know Warren Buffett doesn't have a car payment because he, you know, that's one of his rules, drive an old jalopy, and you shouldn't have a car payment. You shouldn't live against, you know, above your means. And I only bring this up because one of my great friends, and he's one of our franchisees, has multi-unit, and he actually takes care of people like we say, and he gives a $300 car allowance to every manager. Now, that's not bad. And we were talking about this a while back, and he said one of his people came back and said, is there any way he can negotiate that? Because his car payment is $690. And so here's a kid, 24 years of age, who just wasn't prudent enough to understand that that's not a good move. But he got a raise, and so when you get a raise, that means I got money, and I'm going to go buy me a new car. Who doesn't like the smell of a new car? And, you know, so, again, a little reflection on what are we paying, what are we using our money, where are we spending it. And obviously that's a priority for this person, but it's become a problem. And so what can we afford for these big ones? And the next one I want to throw in there is just time. And when I say time, you know, we say time is a precious commodity. It's if you were to have an asset, a balance sheet, it would be on the asset side, obviously. But I have a quick little something from John Maxwell. John Maxwell on the value of time. Time is valuable. Psychiatrist author Scott Peck says, until you value it yourself, you won't value your time. Until you value your time, you will not do anything with it. Now, we've talked a little bit about time management in the past, and we've kind of touched on that. But from another book, it says people don't pay for things with money. They pay with them with time. And we look and say, now, as an example, in 5 years, I want to put away enough money to buy a house. We're not saying that that's what you're, you know, the house doesn't cost a certain amount of money. It costs you 5 years. That's 1/12 of your adult life. The phrase spending your time is not a metaphor. It's how life works. Instead of thinking about what you do and what you buy in terms of money, think about them in terms of time. What is it worth spending your life on? Seeing your work in that light may help change the way you manage your time. And it just brought to light one of my first jobs. I was working for a local guy here, Uncle George, who's kind of a legacy, still working hard at age 90. He's had several heart attacks. Guy doesn't know how to stop. But what he used to say is time is money. And he would hustle us up and say, let's go, fellas, time is money. And, you know, we kind of had that ingrained in our heads. But really, that's what almost every business leader will tell you also, is that we can't be wasting our time. It's a valuable commodity, just like anything else we're budgeting. So, a little bit of a late start. Just a couple of things to talk about. One more item we see almost every time when kids are talking about their money and how they're budgeting and how they don't have any money. Anybody drink coffee? I think most of the world drinks coffee. Well, we've kind of done a little survey down at our training center, and the data is showing a lot of our kids drink 2 coffees a day. That's not unheard of. You know, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, whatever. But it's Starbucks. It's going out. It's not your own coffee. It's not black coffee. It's $4, $5 coffee. So it's amazing when you just say, what if I were to cut that coffee out? Now, some of us are privileged to have free coffee. Some of us are, you know, appreciate that. I know I do. I drink my coffee at home generally, don't go out very often, but regardless, what we're seeing is that a kid who spends that kind of money on coffee, all right, well, that's a couple coffees a day, $8 to $10. Well, weekly then we're talking about maybe $50. So really, for a month, that's a $200 expenditure. That's a car payment. Now think about it. You know, I mean, that's just, well, I got to have my coffee, whatever. Where are we spending our money? So what I'm trying to do is I'm setting this up. Coach Hughes and I have been working on a kind of a template, a formula, a fill-in-the-blanks kind of calculator you can use to play with your own personal budget. And a one-time offer only, free of charge, if you want to look at that and plug your stuff in and just play around, it's kind of fun to look at, and it might scare you. It might get you prepared a little bit better, we hope. So if you want that, text me or email me, and I'll send you that copy. It's really just coming out. We have big plans for it in the future. You might find some mistakes, which is fine. But really what we're doing is we're trying to help people understand the value of budgeting and the value of understanding what money is. So in that light, you can't help but see what's going on with some of these furloughed workers. I'll request a quick prayer for some of these people. There's so many of these stories coming to light. And I saw on the news yesterday, only 18% of Americans are prepared with an emergency fund for more than 3 months. And that's a pretty staggering statistic. Dave Ramsey would always say, you know, the first thing you do is start your emergency fund. And because things are going to happen. Calamities happen in families. You know, there's illness, there's accidents, stuff that you can't budget. So quick usable quote for the week. This comes straight from Churchill. It's not always enough to do our best. It's not always enough to do our best. Sometimes we must do what is required. Sometimes we must do what is required. Winston Churchill. And so right down to the homework. Now we're going to stretch you on this one. Okay? Got to send you back to the website, keithhertling.com, and you got to look at the poem section. Click on poems. There's a poem on there. Sierra inspired me to remember this poem when she picked Don't Criticize. There's a poem on. You scroll down to the bottom right. There's a poem called Don't Criticize. Now, this comes from, as you know, big poem guy. Wrote a couple poem books. This one was actually a Walt Whitman finalist. Very proud of that. But what I'm asking you to do is read that poem, and I want you to try to write a poem. And I know, here it is. you're stepping into unknown territory. I understand. It's stretching it. It's trying something you might not do. And it doesn't have to be a long poem. Even it doesn't have to be anything but some thought. No haiku. You want a haiku. But give it a shot. You'd be surprised at what happens. And you know, good things are going to happen out of this. So, like I say, I'll be very excited to see a couple of good ones, I'm sure. I might have to award some kind of a prize. So, again, if you would like a little copy of that Dale Carnegie Golden Book, let me know, or that personal P&L calculator that you can play with. Very proud of everybody on this call. And so we're going to wind up by saying thank you and good night.